Access Cast, an Accessibility initiative, presents Unstoppable Mindset, the podcast where inclusion, diversity, and the unexpected meet. Hi, I'm Michael Hinkson, Chief Vision Officer for Accessibility and the author of the number one New York Times bestselling book, Thunderdog, the story of a blind man, his guide dog, and the triumph of trust. Thanks for joining me on my podcast as we explore our own blinding fears of inclusion, unacceptance, and our resistance to change. We will discover the idea that no matter the situation or the people we encounter, our own fears and prejudices often are our strongest barriers to moving forward. The Unstoppable Mindset podcast is sponsored by Accessibility. That's ACCESSIBE. Visit www.accessibility.com to learn how you can make your website accessible for persons with disabilities and to help make the internet fully inclusive by the year 2025. Glad you dropped by. We're happy to meet you and to have you here with us. Well, hello again. This is Michael Hinkson, and we appreciate you coming wherever you may be at the moment. Thanks for dropping in to Unstoppable Mindset. We're glad you're here, and we have, I think, another fun episode. We have a person to talk with, a person who I've gotten to know over the past year, and who has become very much involved in some of the accessibility initiatives in the world. He works for Accessibility. His name is Sheldon Lewis, and he works with a lot of nonprofit organizations. I'm sure he'll talk some about that as we go forward. But Sheldon has an interesting story to tell to demonstrate why he, like so many people, is and can be unstoppable. Sheldon, welcome to Unstoppable Mindset.
Hey, I'm glad to be here, Mike. Nice to see you today.
Glad you're here. Well, tell me a little bit about your life. You have not been blind all your life.
No, I was lucky in that I was born with sight, but I have a slow-acting degenerative eye condition called choroideremia, and this has reduced my vision by about 5 to 7% a year, and I was night blind by the time I was 9 and 10 years old, and but I lost most of the rest of my sight in the last 15 years. So I'm lucky. I had sight for most of my life.
So, you know, just to pick on you a little bit, I don't know whether that's luck or not. You know, there are a lot of people who have eyesight and look what they've done with the world. I think that it's a different point of view, needless to say. But I think that having eyesight certainly gave you the ability to learn how, if you will, a lot of people see the world. And now you get to look at how people see the world another way. And what do you think? Do you think that one way is really worse than the other way? Or what do you think about not having eyesight as opposed to having eyesight?
You know, it's a funny thing that you asked that question, because all my life I said, would I rather have another kind of disability? And the answer is no, I wouldn't. And I'm perfectly comfortable with losing my sight, because that's what I've known is going to happen all of my life. So I've adapted along the way, and I'm okay with it. It's not the best situation. I'd rather have sight, but that's my life.
Yeah, I mean, you were born with it, and you don't have that sense as you used to, but at the same time, what you have learned to do is to accomplish tasks in different ways than when you were able to see. I assume exactly that you've done that.
What I haven't learned to do yet is drive blind.
Why is that?
The technology's not there yet.
Exactly right. Yeah. There are examples of people driving. The National Federation of the Blind back in 2011 conducted a demonstration of a car that a blind person could drive. It was a standard Ford Escape, but they put some additional technologies on it to give a driver the information necessary to be able to drive, in this case, around the Daytona Motor Speedway.
Sounds good to me.
And yeah, it's not ready for prime time and for street driving yet, but the concept was proven. If you haven't seen it, go watch the video. It's at www.blinddriverchallenge.org. Blinddriverchallenge.org. It's fascinating. The reality is, and I think you're touching on it, blindness isn't really the problem with most things that we have to deal with. It is it?
Nope. It's just a challenge. And the challenge is to overcome the challenge so that you can keep on living and doing what you want to be able to do.
What is the biggest challenge that you find in the world being a person who happens to be blind?
Oh, the biggest challenge, I guess, is around accessibility and doing things as a couple with my wife. Those are the two big challenges, I think. And by accessibility, I mean how to use websites, how to walk around on the street, how to maneuver without getting hurt, things like that.
So in overcoming those challenges, what would you like to see occur that maybe hasn't really happened yet?
Well, I wish that more companies would adopt accessibility to their websites. There are many technical softwares that aren't accessible at all. And those really prevent me from using those tools in my work life. As far as getting around outside, if there was a technology that was like those new glasses that are available from Google, but also combined with a GPS that could, you know, guide me and tell me this is coming up, stay to the left. Oh, and I would let them know what store I want to go to, and it would guide me right there all in one, and then be able to go into the store and do my business by myself. That would be really ideal.
Mm-hmm. Of course, today you can do that to a large degree using, let's say, an iPhone, because you can use some of the map programs, Blind Square and other apps on that, and accomplish those same things, although there is an advantage to being able to wear glasses. The problem is that at this point in the world, we haven't really seen a pair of glasses developed that will have a long enough battery charge to be able a person to work all day and accomplish the things that they want to do, much less than having the other interpretive information that you want to have.
Yep. It would be great when it comes. I don't believe we're far away. 5G will help that, I guess. And I think battery will happen sooner or later, even if I have to wear a battery pack in my pocket or something with a wire attached to the glasses, that would still be okay.
So as you were growing up and losing some eyesight, you went to school, I assume.
I went to school. I went to university in Philadelphia. I live in Montreal.
What did you graduate with? What degree?
I graduated with a textile management and marketing degree.
What took you there? Why did you get that degree?
We had a family business, and that was in textiles. And I had always wanted to be in that family business. From the day I was diagnosed, I turned to my mother and said, "How am I going to be in the family business if I'm blind?" And that was the last time we discussed that.
What did she say?
She just cried.
Uh-huh.
It was very difficult for her. Very, very difficult.
So how was your family dealing with blindness as you grew up?
To be honest, they didn't help me very much. Mm-hmm. It was too tough a conversation for my mother to have. My father was, you know, a great father, but he didn't or couldn't talk about this blindness thing. And so I went about it by myself and never even told anybody that I was going to be blind until I had to stop driving. And that's when it all came out.
When did you stop driving?
I stopped when I
yourself.
Was 30.
You stopped driving yourself, that is.
That's right. I stopped driving myself when I was 30. I loved driving. It was fantastic. It was my passion. And I still remember it very well.
All right. How old are you now?
I'm 60, going to be 64.
Okay. So you have not driven for more than half your life.
That's right.
Okay. So you got a degree in textile management. And then what did you do?
I went into family business and drove myself around. I opened up some factories. I traveled a lot to Europe, Eastern Europe, all over the world, Africa, and North America, of course. And then it became a little bit more difficult to manage that part of my life because I couldn't drive anymore at night. And, you know, this is in my mid-20s. And going through tunnels was tricky because I'd only have to follow the lines on the roads or the lights from the cars in front of me. And if there weren't any cars, it was a big problem. So I really had to give it up sooner than I did in the end. After that, I managed to luckily stop managing certain facilities that were outside of Montreal. And I started using the public transit system to get around.
And so, yeah, go ahead.
And kept on in the textile business until 3-4 years ago.
So you continued in the business. You were in the family business all that time?
Yes.
So did you essentially assume the responsibilities of the business?
I did. I was the president of the company, and it was strange because I had to keep on changing my abilities and what I could actually perform as the president, as my eyesight went down.
How did your family respond to that?
Well, I have my immediate family, which is my wife and kids.
Right. Well,
It was difficult for my wife to see me lose my sight. My kids knew that I couldn't see at a very, very young age. So it kind of just was a natural thing for them. And they saw it happen and we just dealt with it as a family. But between my wife and I, it was difficult at times.
How about your parents? They must have been seeing this change occur, and then you took over the business. Were they still around? How did they react to all of that?
Yeah, my mother passed away a long, long time ago, so she didn't actually see me go through this part of my life. My father, I worked with him up until the business closed in 2018. But again, we didn't talk too much about the blindness. He saw it happening. He didn't approach me with it very many times. And that's the way it was.
Yeah. And you moved on. So what was his job as the business progressed when you were president and so on?
He was the chairman. We had divisions in different countries. So he took on the management role in two of those divisions. I took the management role in the other ones and I did all the buying. So it was tough to do the buying, as you can imagine, because when you can't see what you're buying, you have to rely on other people to judge for you. And there's all kinds of trust issues that come with that and performance issues. And, you know, they just didn't have the same ideas about what I wanted for the business as I did. So there were difficult times around that.
But you perceived what you needed to do and you pursued your dream.
I did. I tried my best and I never let it get the better of me.
How come the business closed?
Circumstances changed a lot. The world became very focused on a huge selection of product, which meant a very large investment. And unless you had a very good distribution network, a good portion or too much of a portion of those products didn't sell enough. So we ended up, you know, having to take financial losses based on that scenario, and we just couldn't last that out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The whole market in a lot of ways has changed. Companies have come along like Amazon and so on that do the things that they do. And of course, they even make products now, but still they come along, and that changes the whole landscape. And is that a bad thing? Well, it depends on who you are. But for you,
that's right.
But for you, it was just a change that the company couldn't really continue to deal with, I gather.
That's it.
And so you went on. So when did you become totally blind?
I still see light. Okay. Everything is a fog, though, and I have no central vision. So my brain, up until about 5 years ago, kept on saying to itself, I could still see. And it was great because I had this little cocoon of vision that allowed me to pretend that I wasn't blind. And only in the last 5 years I've had to tell myself, no, Sheldon, you really are blind now, and you better get used to being blind.
What did you do to prepare for that?
That's a very good question. I didn't want to prepare until I had to. And unfortunately, the first thing I had to adopt was using a white cane.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't do it until it was too late and I fell and broke my leg. After which point, I knew that I broke it because I wasn't using a cane. I knew that. So I started using it, and it was very difficult not to master, but to overcome the fears of learning how to use it. And but, you know, I could still see more than I could later on. So my first experience with the white cane was less deep than as time went along that it needed to be. My skill set had to improve as time went. I'm happy now. I can walk anywhere in the city. And my biggest problem is when I get into a construction zone or if I get lost. And if I get lost, I hope someone is around to help me. And I'm not shy about asking for help. And at a construction zone in Montreal, anyways, there's always a construction guy on a live construction zone. Anyways, there's always a guy who comes over to take my arm and help me around the construction zone.
Yeah, there's a lot of construction in the world, isn't there?
A lot.
It happens. We all get some of those kinds of things, and there are a lot of sighted people who get trapped in those things too, but
yeah,
but we do have our adventures in those kinds of environments. So you must have faced a lot of fear. When did fear kind of really become an integral part of you having to deal with all this? Or were you fearful at the beginning? I mean, you learned at 9 years old that you were going to be losing eyesight and so on. Was that a fearful time? How does fear enter into your life?
It was a very fearful time. I went to, the first time it became a problem for me, I went to summer camp. And of course, activities take place after dark. And as darkness came along, it was a problem. I get really scared. I didn't know that I should ask anybody for help, so I didn't. And basically, I went back to the cabin as early as I could, and so that I wouldn't have to bump into trees and trip over roots. That was a very scary time. Other times when it was scary was, you know, if I were driving, like I said before, and ended up in a tunnel, or a place where there were no lights on the roads, that wasn't very, very, very much fun either. It took a lot of guts. But I think what took more guts was learning how to use the white cane and becoming familiar with how good it would be for me, and not worrying about what people thought, and just go around finding ways to make it work, adapt to the circumstances, get more training every time my vision went down a little bit. And so that was my first taste of fear. After I quit driving and after a young age, later on, it became, boy, I really can't see right now. I better get Zoom text. Okay, so how do I learn to navigate my computer? And that wasn't so simple, but it wasn't too hard. But the fear of thinking about it and worrying that I wouldn't be able to do it stopped me from trying to do it at an earlier point in my life. And I had to wait until I had no choice. So that was okay. Once I figured out I had no choice, I just went for it. And when I went past being able to use Zoom text, I had to use JAWS. And I just rolled into JAWS, and that was no problem. Continued to get more training around food preparation. So fear stopped being a big part of my life. But it's still, when I have to do something new, it's a little bit fearsome.
Tell people what JAWS is for those who don't know.
JAWS is a screen reader that's quite remarkable. It was developed in the early 90s, and it's gotten pretty good at this point. And it helps me navigate through a website. So if a website is properly coded, JAWS can interact with all the links and fields and forms and buttons properly. But if the website isn't coded, then JAWS doesn't know by using my tab key and my arrow key that those fields are there. And that's what an inaccessible website is. My screen reader doesn't pick it up. And so I don't know it's there.
So to drill down on that a little bit more, just to help, JAWS is a software package that can be loaded on Windows computers primarily. And what it does is it verbalizes whatever comes across the screen, but it is limited to alphanumeric textual information. It doesn't do graphic information, because graphics requires a lot more interpretation, which is another whole story. But JAWS verbalizes what comes along, so yes, long as it can actually understand it, which is really what Sheldon is getting to, which is that there are limitations, and we'll get into that. But you use JAWS, and you know your story very much parallels the stories of so many people who lose eyesight sometime later in life or after birth. And the one thing that we usually encounter in hearing these stories is that there weren't agencies or people around to really start to teach you that it's okay to be blind, that blindness isn't really the end of the world. And you had to eventually break a leg to decide that it would be useful for you and practical to use a white cane, and then eventually accept it. And there's so many stories like that. But the reality is blindness isn't the problem. And it's kind of, we have sort of worked around it. But the real issue is what people think about blindness. If you had had people who you could have gone to or who learned about you and then could come and help you and say, you know, you're going to lose your eyesight, but it's not the end of the world. And the thing to do is to start to learn these techniques now, because the longer you take to decide to do that, the harder it will be, because you won't have the eyesight that you have today. And you never got that opportunity, which is unfortunate, because you might have discovered a lot earlier the advantages of learning blindness techniques to use while you're losing your eyesight.
Well, I have to correct you slightly, because I had the opportunity. My rehab center in Montreal was always there. I've been going there for 40 years. The problem was that because we never talked about it at home, and nobody ever said to me, you could do that, what you just said, Michael, and you could help yourself get trained at an earlier point, stuff like that. And because I was a little fearful of actually being a blind person and having to learn all these new things and a new way of working my life and my lifestyle, I didn't want to do it until I absolutely had to.
How much was the agency there in Montreal? I don't want to use the word pushing, but how involved were they, or were they kind of just saying, well, you're going to have to make the choice to do it. We can't force you. How pushy were they, if you will?
Well, they were very positive in offering me any of the services I wanted, and they kindly introduced all the possible services to me based on my circumstances of that time period. Again, I didn't go to a social worker there, so no one said to me, Sheldon, you'll be better off learning it now than at a later point. And I figured I knew better for myself. Mm-hmm. So I only wanted to learn it when I needed to have it. And so that was a small mistake on my part, perhaps. But looking backwards, it suited me fine, except for the leg part. I was okay with how I approached it.
We interviewed on Unstoppable Mindset some time ago a lawyer who lost his eyesight as he grew older, and he decided that he wouldn't be able to drive anymore and had to recognize that he was blind after he totaled his second car in a year.
Right.
And you know, so there are things that happen. It is a story. It is a constant story. And the problem is that in dealing with blindness, if there aren't a lot of role models, and if there aren't agencies that can learn to couch it in a way that you can understand, you're going to do exactly what you did. Well, okay, but you're here now, and you have moved on from a life of total eyesight to a life mostly of no eyesight at all. And you sound like you're accepting that pretty well.
Yes.
And so, yeah, go ahead.
That's okay for me.
Good. Yeah. So you lost your eyesight, you broke your leg, you learned to use a cane, you now move around Montreal and all those kinds of things. You closed the business in 2018, then what?
Then I had to figure out what I wanted to do. And I had always wanted to be involved in somehow helping the community. And I wasn't sure what that meant or how to get involved in it, because I'd never done anything like that before. I was very busy with work. And so I started looking around, how am I going to approach business and accessibility at the same time? And that's when I discovered Accessibility and their website, because all the other websites I had looked at in this journey of what am I going to do now were basically inaccessible and gave me problems navigating. And when I got to Accessibility's website, their website was navigable. And I said, wow, this is incredible. That's how I met Accessibility. And at the same time, I started to get involved with the community here in Montreal. I joined the philanthropy committee at the local rehab center, started doing some committee work and fundraising. I got myself on a city accessibility advisory committee that lasted a year. And I've tried hard to integrate into this community and create a new path for myself.
When did you discover Accessibility?
I think I discovered them in 2019. And when I discovered them, I was so excited. I called the number on the screen and the CEO picked up, and it's like, wow, we hit it off right away. And I got to know the other partners in the company as well over time. And I felt very good and comfortable around them and their technology.
So you discovered it and you called the number and well, so what have you done with Accessibe over the past 3 years? Did you just start to use it and learn about it or what?
No, at first I went and I tried to sell the technology. I thought it was a great offer and I wanted to share it with everybody that I could. And I found that to be a little bit more difficult than I thought. I had never done a cold call sales kind of job before, and I had never sold technology before. And I wasn't hitting on a lot of people who wanted accessibility for their websites. That was the really strange thing, is that nobody I was contacting wanted accessibility for the sites.
Why?
They said it's too expensive, it's too long, I don't need it, I don't have clients for it, and I'm not interested. And what is accessibility? Many of them asked me, I don't even know what that is. So I gave that up, and after 6 months, it was too hard, and I wasn't getting enough results. I started looking into other technologies, ran into the same problems with accessibility and using those platforms to build a business around, or, you know, something for myself to do. And then very luckily, Accessibe called me not too long ago, last April or March, and said that they were starting a new initiative called the Nonprofit Partnership Program. And they wanted to know if I wanted to join as a person working for them. And I said, well, what would I be doing? And they told me, well, I think you might like this job. It's all about contacting a nonprofit organizations that provide services to the disabled and offering our technology at no charge amongst other community-driven initiatives. And I said, wow, you mean I can meet all these wonderful people, talk about accessibility, give them a solution, and help all their clients who need more websites to be accessible with their accessibility needs? I'm in. It took me 5 minutes to decide that I was in and ready to do this job.
So since how, then, yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, since then, I've really enjoyed my eye-opening experience, learned a whole bunch of new technologies that I had to start using to do the job, and I met a lot of great people.
So how has that been different than going out and selling the actual product to paying customers? Why are you more successful doing this?
That's a good question. The people are more receptive. They know they need accessibility. They even feel that as it is, you know, an organization providing services to the disabled, their website should be accessible. So they're on board almost immediately. And I don't have to do too much convincing. Whereas, you know, commercial customers, it was a lot of convincing and including why they should be accessible.
Do you think yet the landscape, the mindset is changing, and that maybe more commercial organizations, profit-making companies are recognizing the need for accessibility, or do you think society is there yet?
That's another good question. I think that the Black Lives Matter whole thing plus COVID have really raised the awareness levels of everyone to many different plights of different people. And so I think that people are more open to what accessibility means now and trying to become accessible and do the right thing way more than compared to before. So yes, I think the commercial world has changed. And not only that, I think they're also realizing that as the population gets older, there's, I think, about 20% of people have one or two disabilities, and that might be one of their clients. And on top of that, if they help those clients use their websites, those clients might become loyal customers too. So I think all this information is starting to sink in and people are more receptive and open to it now.
So what kind of new technologies have you learned over the past several months?
I've had to learn how to use Zoom. That's been a good challenge. I learned how to use PowerPoint just last week to do a presentation. I've learned how to use Excel in a much deeper way. So that's been good. And the best part is that I've just grown comfortable with doing all the different parts of my job and this new technology. Whereas 6 months ago and 8 months ago when I started this job, I was very nervous about the technology and using it. You know, a perfect example is when I go to a Zoom meeting, after I admit the person to the meeting, the software tells me that the person's left the waiting room. So at first I thought, oh no, I lost a customer. Oh no, you know, and I was panicking at everything. And it took me about 10 tries to start to realize that, no, I didn't lose anybody because they were going to come automatically to the meeting after they left the meeting room. So that was, you know, a good experience. Now I feel very comfortable. I know how to schedule my own meetings. I've learned how to use Calendly. It's good.
What are some of the other major sales tools that you've had to learn to be able to reach out to people, deal with letters, deal with contact databases, and so on? What do you use?
Yeah, I use LinkedIn a lot. Mm-hmm. LinkedIn, I find, has become more accessible in the past year and a half. I don't have as much trouble as I did 2 years ago using LinkedIn. I do a lot of marketing on LinkedIn, and I like it. I use it on my phone. Of course, I had to learn how to use my phone as well as a blind person. Thank goodness the iPhones came along with VoiceOver when they did, because it was exactly at the time when I could no longer use a cell phone. And I was trying to figure out what I was going to do in business if I couldn't use a cell phone. And then there it was. Lucky me.
And there you are.
Yeah. I use Twitter sometimes, not too much. I can use Facebook, but I don't really like it. So I think those are the technologies I've been using lately.
What are some of your real successes since you have begun this journey and are working with nonprofits? What are some of the really exciting opportunities that came along where you've been able to truly assist, since that's what you wanted to do?
Yes. That's a very good question. I think that the first answer is that I'm helping all these people get to be accessible and overcome their own challenges of how to attain accessibility for the websites. Everybody finds it very difficult to take the time to spend the money because they're all limited budgets. So I think the first best part of my experience with this is helping people become accessible.
Can you give us a story of one place where you had to take people through the journey and then they came out the other end and found that what you were doing was a good thing?
Yes. I met with Community Living Hamilton, and they could not afford accessibility. And after telling me why, you know, it's too much, takes too long, they don't have enough people, resources. I took them on a tour of the software. I did a demonstration for them. They were blown away. They couldn't believe how good the software was and how accessible it made a website seem to them. And they said, okay, I'm ready to sign up. I just have to speak with my executive director, get everybody on the team on board. And everybody in the organization came back and said they loved it and they were ready to go forward with it. So that's a good feeling. And I know I've helped a whole bunch of people gain access to their website at the same time.
How many organizations do you think over the past several months you've been able to meet with and get to make their websites more accessible?
I think that I've personally gotten to about the 50 mark or 60 mark, but I've been in touch with about 125 clients right now. But it's funny, not all organizations want to go down the path of accessibility, even if we're willing to provide it to them for free. They never say why, they just don't come back.
And you don't know whether they've gone elsewhere or what.
Oh, this one organization told me they went somewhere that their web developer told them they should go to.
Uh-huh.
But no one else has told me why they're not taking on accessibility.
They don't make them just accessible for blind people, do they?
No. They're accessible if they do a good job on their website accessibility initiative. They can address the needs of all the different disability groups that are out there. That's why I love Accessibility, especially because it addresses all of the disability groups' needs that are out there and brings up the general level of accessibility for any site. And it's a great thing.
What would you say to anyone who is listening to this and who wants to learn more about accessibility, nonprofit or profit making?
Well, there's a lot of information on the internet. Obviously, they can go to Accessibility's website. They can get in touch with me anytime. I'll be an impartial counselor for them to tell them about what accessibility is and how they can get it, and the different possibilities that are out there for them to use. And there's lots of resources. So we just want more and more people to become accessible on their websites as quickly as possible. That's our goal and mission at Accessibility, actually, to make all websites accessible by the year 2025.
Ambitious goal.
Ambitious.
Something but still,
like 500,000 new websites every month or something like that worldwide. That's a huge number. So a scalable solution like Accessibility is great for that because you don't need to spend 10 or 15 weeks coding a website and spend, you know, between $5,000 and $30,000 or $50,000 making that website accessible and then having to keep it accessible afterwards is another job in itself that Accessibility tackles very handily.
You have taken an incredible journey in your life, certainly one that you didn't expect to have to take or that you thought you would take, but you've taken it and you've come out the other side and done pretty well. What would you say to anyone who's listening to this who happens to be losing their eyesight or who has not been given any kind of training about dealing with blindness, or for that matter, any person who is encountering the fact that they are becoming a person with a disability? What kind of advice would you give them?
Well, when you have a disability, you can't do things at the same pace you used to be able to do them before. Especially if the disability grows on you, you're slowly becoming less speedy. And the best thing is if you can recognize that and slow down so that you can do more for yourself, be aware of more, not hurt yourself at the same time, recognize the challenge, try and adapt to it. Adapting is a big skill that takes a long time to recognize you need to have, because all you have to do when you have a disability, and this is not true for everybody, but you have to try and find another way to do the same thing. So if someone loses the use of their legs, for example, and they used to go shopping everywhere when they used to be able to walk, and then suddenly they have to use a wheelchair or crutches or something like that. They have to figure out a way with help or without help to be able to do the same thing so that their life doesn't get ruined and they can keep on doing things. The worst part of my vision for myself was when I used to wonder, could I overcome my challenges so that I didn't, you know, just get downed by losing my sight. And I haven't. I've lived up to my own expectations, my own wishes, by keeping on being able to do things, even if it's a new way.
If people want to reach out and get in touch with you, how can they do that?
Well, they can reach me on my telephone, which is a toll-free number at 855-561-4297, or they can reach me by email at Sheldon, SHELDONLE, at ACCESSIBLikeBob.com. And I'll be happy to speak with anybody about accessibility issues.
That is great. Well, Sheldon, I want to thank you for taking time out of your day, your busy day, to visit with us here on Unstoppable Mindset. And I think it's pretty clear that you've demonstrated your ability to continue to be unstoppable. For any of you listening, feel free to reach out to Sheldon. Again, email is SheldonLE at Accessibi, ACCESSIBLikeBaker.com. And if you would like to reach out and comment to me about this podcast, we hope you'll do so. You can reach me at Michael, HIMICHAELHI, at Accessibi.com. Visit our podcast page, www.michaelhingson.com/podcast. Love to hear your thoughts. If you'd like to be a guest on our podcast, please reach out. And also, I ask you, when you listen to us, please, wherever you listen to podcasts, give us a 5-star rating. We'd appreciate good ratings from you. It helps us and it helps other people understand what we're doing and that the world really can be inclusive for everyone if we allow our mindsets to let us be unstoppable and move forward. Sheldon, again, thanks very much. And
thank you very much, Michael. It's been a pleasure talking with you today. I really enjoyed myself.
Well, thank you. I did as well. And we hope that you and everyone else will come back again next week for another edition of Unstoppable Mindset, the podcast where inclusion, diversity, and the unexpected meet. Thanks again. You have been listening to the Unstoppable Mindset podcast. Thanks for dropping by. I hope that you'll join us again next week and in future weeks for upcoming episodes. To subscribe to our podcast and to learn about upcoming episodes, please visit www.michaelhingson.com/podcast. Michael Hingson is spelled MichaelHingson. While you're on the site, please use the form there to recommend people who we ought to interview in upcoming editions of the show. And also, we ask you and urge you to invite your friends to join us in the future. If you know of anyone or any organization needing a speaker for an event, please email me at speaker@michaelhingson.com. I appreciate it very much. To learn more about the concept of blinded by fear, please visit www.michaelhingson.com/blinded by fear. And while you're there, feel free to pick up a copy of my free ebook entitled Blinded by Fear. The Unstoppable Mindset podcast is provided by AccessCast, an initiative of Accessibi, and is sponsored by Accessibi. Please visit www.accessibi.com. Accessibi is spelled ACCESSIBE. There you can learn all about how you can make your website inclusive for all persons with disabilities and how you can help make the internet fully inclusive by 2025. Thanks again for listening. Please come back and visit us again next week.